Back to our next talk. This is Privacy Week, day 3. The next talk will be held in English. I'd like to welcome Professor Attard once again, Kuckelberg. Yep. Getting closer?
Yes.
Okay, close. Oh, that's fine. He's from Belgium, but he lives in Austria and teaches at the University of Vienna. He's a professor of philosophy and media and technology, and he will talk about the problems, about the ethical problems with this new thing and stuff we have here, especially robots and artificial intelligence. And yeah, I'm very, very looking forward to listen to your talk. Give him a great hand. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your kind introduction. Also, for thanks for the invitation, of course, and a special thanks to the translation team. Good afternoon. So basically, my background is in philosophy of technology. I'm a philosopher, but really focus on trying to understand and evaluate new technologies, in particular robotics and artificial intelligence. And that will be also the focus today, especially artificial intelligence. So yeah, on the one hand, I contribute to philosophy, but I also am involved in all kind of technical projects. One of them is robots for autistic children, also in a project on wearable robots. And I think about how to involve various stakeholders in the development of the new technologies. I also organized Robot Philosophy 2018, a conference where I brought together policymakers, technical people and philosophers and social scientists, because I think that this kind of problems that we're talking about here needs really a lot of disciplines and a lot of people, not only in academia, but also in civil society and elsewhere. In Austria, I'm in the Robot Rat, thinking about policy, and in Europe also policy on artificial intelligence, so just to give you some background. So what I do is that I think I use philosophy to help thinking about technologies. On the other hand, for me, technology is also a way to do philosophy. I think technology raises very interesting philosophical questions, and so it's another way of doing philosophy. So let's start with AI then. AI is usually thought of in the images that we borrow from science fiction. I think that if there is any danger or promise, it's the AI that's already in your pocket, so to speak. It's the AI that's there in the software that's used already and that's developing. It's less visible. It's not like this one, like the robot that comes to you and takes over the world and so on. So I would like to argue against replacement images where humanity is seen as being replaced by robots, by AI. But it's difficult to go against the tide, because even in the technological world, there are very powerful and influential people like Elon Musk who warn for the risks of AI, influenced by transhumanists such as Nick Bostrom, who warn for the risks of artificial intelligence. And of course, there are risks of artificial intelligence and robotics, but they don't necessarily need to be framed in terms of stories like singularity, like as if there is going to be very soon a total alteration of everything because of technology. I think this kind of images have a long history, going back to at least 19th century, where on the one hand there was fascination with technology, but on the other hand also fears. And for example, in the novel by Mary Shelley, Frankenstein, these fears were expressed. So there's a whole tradition about that, romantic reactions against technology, and they still today have an influence on how we think about technology. Now, I think it's best to when we talk about the ethics of robotics and AI, to not go with this kind of images, not talk about singularity, but talk about the issues that are there in the near future, because there are changes in industry, in daily life, the way we work, in finance, where algorithms are used that get increasingly smarter, in transportation, issues of self-driving cars, robots in healthcare, military applications where drones can select targets and things like that. Of course, artificial intelligence is always also linked with data, big data, other data. There are ideas of Internet of Things. It's clear that there are things happening, and so we should take seriously the technological changes, and we should think about the ethics there. Now, when thinking about the ethics, the problem is that one problem is that for regulators, for example, that these technologies, they are everywhere, and there's no clear border between very smart, a little bit smart, and so on. We have a lot of kind of algorithms, and they do all kind of things. And some are called AI, some are not called AI. Robotics is also a vague boundary. It's clearly software embedded in a material form, but if for example a speaking device, an assistive device, is it a robot, is it not a robot? Philosophically, I think it's not so important the exact form it takes, but it's important how we perceive it, and it's important, of course, what it does, how autonomous is it really, how intelligent is it really. And then we get to issues that I think are there for all kind of IT systems, so not only for robotics and AI. And of course, privacy here, we think a lot about privacy here, is one of these. And obviously, it's privacy, security also, and related problems concerning surveillance are very important. But they're not specific to robotics and AI. They have happened in various systems. For example, the what's happening now with voice interfaces means that robots or assistive devices can listen to you. Your phone listens to you. Apparently, all these possibilities create huge problems. I would like to make two contributions to this debate. One is to say that privacy and security are ecological in the sense that you cannot just talk about the problems in terms of privacy with one object or one specific technological thing. You have to talk about the whole system and the whole relations between the various technologies. And the second is that all the risks that are there with privacy and security are, of course, they can be described in a technical way, but I think it's important to not only describe them as such, but also look at what is the experience of people. Risk is always also perceived risks, and we respond to the risks. And in my book, Human Being at Risk, I offered an account where it's more about like, okay, what is my experience as in an existential way? What are the fears of people, and how do we experience the risk? And there it's important always to see risk as something that's also emotionally experienced. So fear has an important role there. The idea that something might happen in the future but might not. And the same also in privacy, it's very important because we have this idea with the current technologies that someone might be listening to us, that someone might be accessing our data, but we don't know exactly why. So we are all these platforms, in all these apps, we know that it can be done, but we don't know if it actually happens. And that's very similar to what Foucault called panopticon, to the idea that in a prison in the 19th century, a building would be designed that prisoners can be watched, but they could not watch if someone was watching them. They could not know that. But it gives them the feeling that, maybe someone is watching, so I have to behave according to the rules. And this kind of thing is happening also today on social media, on when we use all kind of technologies. It's not always the case that someone is actually using our data. It often is, but the point is we don't know. And this not knowing if someone is watching is a very powerful way of surveillance that's used by totalitarian states. The point is not that the police comes into your house, for example, but that you have the fear every day that someone might be listening, that someone might be coming in your house, and so on. So this is a very problematic thing, and it's very difficult to solve this, and there are also very powerful actors, very big companies involved in all this. So as citizens, we have very little power to do something against this, especially because through work relations also we are kind of forced almost to use certain software, and so as you know, this is a very difficult issue. Of course, resistance is possible, and I come to some more solutions later, but I think it's first important to understand how fear can be created. And so when it comes to privacy, it is not only about ticking the boxes and knowing some objective knowledge about what happens. It's also that even if it's not happening, because it happens so much everywhere and we hear so much stories about it, it's also this fear of being watched, being not private. There are further problems that have to do with technologies. Of course, companies are very interested in making the technology addictive. And this brings with it a problem that, yeah, it actually is quite functional. People do get addicted to the phone, to certain programs. So how to deal with that? It's not a new problem. People were also addicted to television. People were addicted to newspaper, reading the newspaper, and so on. But we have to think about it. Okay, how? What is the new mechanisms, the economy of desire and seduction that's in these technologies. But specific for robotics and AI is that they more and more, because they get more intelligence, they can do more things by themselves and replace tasks from humans. So it's not so much about replacing the humans as such, but it's replacing specific tasks. It's not even always about taking the jobs of humans. It's really specific things that these machines can do. And this creates problems of responsibility, because we are used in our moral and legal systems to say, like, okay, you did it, you're responsible for what you did. But if the algorithm does it, who is responsible for it? For example, on financial markets, if you have an algorithm buying and selling at high speed, it's then that smart algorithm, that AI, that does the decisions. So who is responsible when there's a crash, for example? The same if you would have in healthcare an expert system deciding about medication, or a care robot that gives a medication and there's an error there, how to deal with these things. So this is really a problem, how to trace responsibility. And also there the perception of people is important. For example, with self-driving cars, people have difficulties to give the steering wheel to the car, to just sit there as a passenger. But actually, when we take an airplane, the autopilot is flying most of the time, and people don't seem to have a problem with that. So there are issues about perception, about acceptability, and it would be interesting to further discuss why is it that we perceive these risks in different way? Why is it that we accept more automation there? And then, it's important in these discussions to not always speak about replacements, so to look at various degrees of autonomy. In this case with the cars, we already have cruise control, and we have some systems already that work quite well. I can imagine soon we will, on the motorway, for example, put on a kind of autopilot. But going further than that is more morally problematic, because the more it takes over, then if something wrong happens, who is responsible and how to deal with this problem? For example, in Arizona, was already a pedestrian that died from a self-driving car used by Uber. Also, earlier in 2016, from Tesla, there was an accident. So these are, from an academic point of view, interesting cases, but also from a practical point of view, really problems, right? So as a society, we have to deal with this. It's not clear if our legal systems, for example, can deal with that in a good way. Then there are problems that sound more like science fiction, but are actually not so science fiction as they seem, namely moral status of AIs and robots. I work quite a lot on that. So one thing that robots and AIs can have is moral agency, meaning that they have more capacities that are human-like and take decisions, for example. But then the question is how is that compared to humans? Because humans, they take decisions in a way that has some rule following and rationality, but there's also emotions involved. So do we somehow want to imitate these emotions as well or not? Is the machine, is the kind of reasoning always better? Is it good to follow rules, or is in some situations some kind of intuition necessary? And then the question is, can AI mimic intuition? When people try to demystify intuition. But it is an interesting question. What kind of knowledge is intuition? How do we actually arrive at this? So it always goes both ways. I think scientists also learn a lot about human beings. So there's a question about moral agency. What can the robot do, morally speaking, or the AI? But there's also moral patience question. If people, for example, kick a robot, then is this something that's wrong, or is it fine to do that? It happened, for example, there was a hitchhiking robot and it was molested, was violated, vandalized. It depends a lot, morally speaking, how you call it, right? Because in the words is already a moral judgment. So one can also just say destroyed, like you say, of an object. But some people reacted to it as if, like, oh, don't do that to the robot, poor robot, and so on. So is this language, if people use that, is it a language that's good, or is it problematic? So for that reason, philosophers can think about, what kind of thing is this machine? Is it just a thing, or is it more than a thing? And what could be reasons to call it more than a thing? So I worked on that, and for me it's important to see this reaction as part of a social and relational world. I think we are used as human beings to react to each other in various ways as social beings, and then this is transferred to the robot, which seems human-like. And even if we know that it's just a machine, we still react as social beings. And also psychologists and sociologists can say a lot about that. But we will have more cases like this when robots, but also bots on the internet, for example, get better in natural language. How do we deal with that if we can no longer distinguish between a bot and a human being? And thus a very smart bot, would it have rights, or would it be wrong to switch it off, for example? So these kind of questions will be there when technology gets better. It's also good to note that when we're talking about ethics, it's not just that we have our values ready and that we can just apply to new cases. Our thinking about ethics also changes with new technologies. For example, with the use of new social media, we have given away more privacy than before. So I'm not now saying if that's good or not good, but it's definitely a change. So there could be different values, or what we mean by privacy can be different than in the past. Because in the if you just think about it in material ways, it's like, okay, I don't want someone to enter my house first. Yeah, so that was maybe the first in modern times. But then with the new technologies, the definition of what privacy is changes to, I don't want to be on camera, or in this case, I don't want my data to be used by this particular platform, Facebook. So I think technology does change morality, and we also can, when we're aware of that, we can try to think more critical about it. Like, how does it differ with previous media, and what kind of media do we actually want? Because the technology really shapes and influences that. In these discussions, often it strikes me that we assume a very kind of universal standard user, quite abstract user, but of course there are very different kind of users. There are men and women, there are children and older people, there are people who have all their cognitive capacities, there are people who are vulnerable in various ways. So this is also for technologies like robotics, for example, very important, I think, to take into account who is this user you're developing your technology to. And that's also true for software on the internet, because you don't know who is actually using it sometimes. And it can be vulnerable people, and all kind of things can happen to them. We also just heard in the previous talk some things about that. Of course, there are things about safety. It's good to think about this also not in a material way. What does safety on the web mean, for example? And then, yeah, talking about elderly people, the human dignity. Does the use of robots for elderly care, for example, mean that this whole practice changes completely to adapt to the robot, or is the robot doing something that responds to human needs? So there are all kind of worries about that. Also, moral distance. If you have drones that can do things by themselves, can kill people automatically without human intervention, is that something that we want to allow? There are, of course, also good kind of distance. If a surgeon from another part of the world who is very good can operate on someone in another part of the world, this sounds also really good. But what does this distance mean for the surgeon, for the experience of the operation, for the success of the operation, but also the experience of patients? So it's not so clear that what's possible is always good and is always also accepted. And then nowadays we have a lot of questions about the societal consequences, for example, the future of work. So if we have software, if we have robots, if we have AIs that can take our job or part of our job, who is the hour, so which jobs are going, which are not. There's a huge discussion about it. Some people say it's just 9% of jobs will disappear. Others say it's half of the jobs that will go. So there's a lot of discussion about that. I think for this it's also important to look at alternative scenarios where humans and machines, humans and software work together, and that's already happening now in a way. We are kind of cyborgs in our work. We are constantly working together with a machine, with various software, with algorithms that do things for us. And so one could say that there is a kind of cyborg way of working already. So how will this look like in the future? Is a good question. Also, when we're talking about AI, there are two problems that are particularly relevant. One is bias. AIs train on particular data sets. These data sets may contain a bias. These data may come from the internet, for example. So what does this mean? As a programmer, for example, does it mean that you have to eliminate all bias, or do you have to accept that there is some bias in society and that this goes into the algorithm? In any case, or that the algorithm does something with this data, that contain bias. How can this be avoided? Can this be avoided at all? Of course, in many applications, what you actually want is that the algorithm discriminates in the sense of saying this person, for example, can go through security. This person needs scanning. That within that setting, but first of all, we don't always have to accept the goals of current security systems. And second, even if you accept them, the question is like, yeah, do you get in bias by having this profiling? On what exactly is this based? And the problem nowadays is that this is not transparent. So this is also a related problem that we don't really know as users, as people who are the users / victims of these systems, what exactly is happening behind the screen and behind all the technical things that are done. So one could say like, yeah, we need more transparency and everything needs to be open. But first of all, not everyone understands technical code. And second, with machine learning, the way the algorithm comes to its decision is very different than humans come to their decision, or than the old-fashioned AI comes to the decision, which can be represented as a tree, for example. It's very easy. You see like, okay, it's based on this criteria and says yes or no. But if it's probabilistic and if it's based on this machine learning techniques of today, there seems to be this problem, what's called a black box, that the algorithm, it's not clear what it's actually doing. And so if that's not clear even to the technical people, then there's a problem, maybe even for democracy, but in general definitely for trust in the system. And trust in the data, also when we think again about bias. There are also gender issues with design of technology in robotics, when you have, for example, this design of a household robot, but also more generally, robots raise these questions about human relationships, for example, sex robots. So this reminds us that technical systems are always part of a bigger social whole, and that they cannot just be called technical by itself. They're socio-technical, as people in social science say. They're always related to how we do things in society. And for example, feminist, or I should say gender issues, is one angle to look at societal problems. So tomorrow, for example, I have run this workshop with people of my group on feminism and philosophy of technology. So what is needed then, given these problems, I think, is an approach to ethics that's bottom-up, proactive, global, and positive. Bottom-up means that it not only starts from ethical principles, because many philosophers always start from the principles, also legal people. Let's talk about principles, values, and so on. I think it's important to also look at the technologies itself, to talk with people who actually use them, who develop them, and to try to, in the development, also see how things can be improved. So to also take into account the experience of people. Like often, people who think abstractly about problems in academia make the mistake of really being too remote from the experiences of people in the field. And of course it's there is a benefit to abstraction, like in the sciences, mathematical methods gives some benefit, of course, but one should be aware that this is always this abstraction from experience is always problematic in the sciences, but also in ethics. And so one way to do something about that is say, let's have different stakeholders talking together and have a talk about ethics together, rather than top down from policymakers, for example, that top down try to push certain policies without asking people. But luckily there's more and more of this proactive means that you're actually at the stage of design, try to fix things, because if you don't do that, there are problems. So also from the point of view of a private company, for example, it's very important to avoid disasters like the Volkswagen one. So if once people are more aware that developed systems are aware of the ethical component, I think they can act more actively, try to avoid things on beforehand by thinking about scenarios like what could go wrong, and not only what could go wrong technically speaking, but also what could go wrong in terms of societal consequences. So proactivity is good there. It needs to be global, because we can have in Europe all kind of rules, but then the problem is that there are also other countries, so there's a problem of cultural difference. In robotics, I'm also involved in an NGO that tries to have more responsible robotics. I think in general, civil society is very important. Also, organizations like computer clubs are very, very important in this thinking about how to get more responsible software, more responsible AI, and so on. Then positive ethics means that ethics is not just about constraints. So many people in the technical and business world think that once you talk about ethics, it's about like, oh, I'm not allowed to do things. And we're used to that. Think about ethics like that from childhood. Actually, it's something like it's we think that it's about this is forbidden, but there is also an ethics that tries to think positively. What would be the good life? What would be the good way? And start from there, and then work your way back to saying, okay, what does it mean now for this particular software? What does it mean for this particular robot? And it means also exploring scenarios, exploring new possibilities. And I think art can help with this. I think we need this kind of connections between academia, art, policy, technical subjects, and industry. And in that, it's important to reflect on the experience that people have already who use similar software, similar robots, maybe not so smart algorithms, but maybe some problems are already there. And maybe in practice also people develop strategies to deal with them. For example, privacy strategies, how to deal, for example, you still use Facebook, but deal with it in a different way. Still use all kind of social media, but try to find, on the basis of experience, ways of dealing with it. It's called wisdom. It's called practical knowledge. So also then finally, for in ethics, I think we can think about like what would be the good thing to do. But there is a lot of thinking needed also about process. How can innovation processes be improved? How can also development processes be improved? And how can we bring together these different stakeholders, and not always only the governmental, but also non-governmental organizations? How can that feed into policy? The problem is, of course, that some players, big companies, but also states, have a lot more power than individual citizens. So that's one problem. Another problem in ethics is also that we don't really totally agree on what the best life is. So also that also means for thinking about the best life with technology that we don't always agree about that. So one recipe in one country is not necessarily the best in another country. So that's also something we need to deal with. So to conclude, I think there's a future of AI and robotics, but it needs to go beyond these images of fear. But also the blind fascination, and taking into account the ethical problems, because like this, AI and robotics can be more responsible. And I think if for example in AI we want to avoid an AI winter, as it's called, a period where there's no longer a lot of investment in AI and development in AI, because people think it's not a good way to go. Then it's important to to think about ethics and to bring in expertise about ethics. And I want to end with that, because in that way we can say like, yeah, this ethics is really necessary. Yeah? So the future needs to be ethical in robotics and AI. Thank you for that. Like this, we have time for questions.
Yeah, so we have approximately 10 minutes time for mm-hmm. questions. We have a microphone angel, so if you have any questions, just raise your hand.
Thanks for the very interesting talk. You mentioned the black box that created when we have machine learning artificial neural networks. Mm-hmm. So, assuming that artificial neural networks lead to something like a super intelligence mm-hmm. that's more capable than human beings, do you think that we should propose or build a kill switch, an off switch for a super intelligence? Or do you think there would be a danger in that super intelligence then turning against their creators? And is that an ethical question for you?
Mm-hmm. Okay, thanks for that question. So first of all, I try not to go in that scenario, to step in that scenario. I think that it's very difficult to, if not impossible, to imitate human-like general intelligence in AI and in other ways. But of course, there are dangers when we have more and more automated systems that we need to be able to switch them off. And for example, in the financial world, at some point, for example, they literally took out the power plug, so they switched it off. But the issue is not so easy with the switch off ID, because in the airplane industry, we see that sometimes a human being switches off the autopilot and tries to fix the problem, and then everything goes wrong and there's a crash. So it's very difficult. So once we rely on these systems, we tend to let them actually do their thing. But I think what we should think about is like, how can we avoid a situation where it goes that far that we give away so much power to this machine? So maybe we can have some solutions that develop a very specific, very high intelligence for certain tasks, but that humans do other tasks, and that actually this kind of scenario is avoided by distributing the tasks in different way and by really having not a kind of general oversight artificial intelligence, but just for the specific tasks and always together with humans. Something like that. I think it's in the working together with humans that we can find a good setup and avoid the problems that you're talking about.
Okay. So, any further questions? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you for your talk. I think I do have one theoretical or abstract question, mm-hmm. even though you pointed to the importance of being well in the field and in the experience, especially. So my question concerns your definition of privacy, because you mm-hmm. Talked about the importance of experience, and I mm-hmm. think that's well is really important, is especially overlooked in the philosophical discussion about privacy. But my question is, if you would define privacy simply as an experience, or if you think about combining it with maybe a control or a nexus definition or something like that?
combining it with, can you say a bit more with what kind of definition?
For example, with a control definition, thinking about, well, privacy being your control over your data, for example, or I think the way you talked about the fear and the way that fear can alter behavior really ties or could be combined really well with the restricted access definition and the questions of actual access and experience access. So my question is rather how strong would you make the side of experience in your definition of privacy?
Okay, thanks for that question. I think it's important to connect the two. So it's not for me an either or question. It's not that I want to put subjective against objective or something, but I rather want to say like these are both sides of the same coin. So you have the more definition in terms of control of data, which you can make very specific, like here this data from this streaming and so on. But there's always the emotional side to it too. What does it mean for me, for this person, to be exposed to those people or those persons or in that way and so on. And so I think we should just not forget about this experiential side. And this experiential side can not necessarily be covered by laws or regulations or by making rules within a particular society. You need to actually then maybe adapt also these rules again on the basis of the experience. It's definitely the case that whenever we make rules, that this should be seen as not a final kind of thing, but in the spirit of Dewey also as a kind of, it's a problem solving thing, and so it's part of how we solve the problem. But problem solving can also include talking with each other about it and trying to see what is actually the experience of different people about this, and not always projecting your own experience onto others, for example.
Okay, we have time for one more question, if there is any. Okay, so in that case, I have a short question.
Okay.
Because you talked about the difference between automated cars and automated systems and airplanes and something like that. So what do you think, you compared them, but the point is, so for me the point is, in one case you have humans, even if it's just an illusion, as you said, that the pilots may do things much worse than the computers, but do you think that's an important, that's the point? Humans trust these things because there's a human sitting there, even just for decoration, or do you think that there's another layer to this?
Yeah, thanks for the question. There's definitely, so there's a trust in the technology, but the passengers in this case, they trust the pilot who then trusts the system. So it's true that it's more complex than that. It's not just that we trust the whole technological system, but we trust it because there are specific people, and I think we're made to trust others, other human beings, and we have more difficulties, I think, with trusting things, technological systems. So when they do things by themselves, we are confronted with this, like how to deal with that. And so this is an interesting discussion, I think, about trust that we should have. What does it mean to trust a robot, for example? Should we talk about trust there? Maybe we can only trust in people. And how are these people then related to the technological system?
Okay. So, thanks a lot, Mark. And a round of applause, I'd say.
Thanks.